Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Welcome to another Wednesday evening and another episode of the Voice of Indie podcast. This is episode number 175. Imagine that, 175. I'm your host, Beam Weeks, and with me is Mr. Stephen Gies. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing all right. I'm trying to remember the first 100 or so episodes, but I guess they're in the archives, and we'll learn where to find those archived episodes here in a few minutes. But I spent the day on the University of Alabama Birmingham Medical Campus today, so I wore my University of Michigan Wolverines shirt. And I got stopped and talked to by dozens of people. You can really attract attention now. If you're not up to date on college football, I have 3 degrees from Michigan, and my Michigan team finished the season number one this year. And my lady friend has 2 degrees from the University of Alabama, and her team finished number four, which means on New Year's Day, the Rose Bowl between team levels one and four is Michigan versus Alabama. So I'm wearing my Michigan shirts everywhere I go down here in Alabama right now. And they take college football seriously down here. Who'd think, huh?
Yeah. Okay, before we get all hopping into stuff, I kind of want to give a shout-out to Verwayne Greenhow. You know, he's a regular listener, and his wife, Lisa. Verwayne's had some issues that he's dealing with health-wise, and we are wishing him the best and hope that he is on the mend and will be in the I'm not sure if he's going to be in the audience tonight, but hopefully he will be. And if he is, shoot us a tweet, Verwayne, and let us know.
Go, Verwayne. So we published a book this week, and it's by tonight's guest, Gwen M. Plano. It's called The Soul Whisperer's Decision, and it's out there in pre-sale now for a January 15th release date. So you can order your copies now, and then you'll receive your copies in the middle of January, but we like to get those pre-sales in there so that it helps drive up the sales rankings on the actual release date. Hardcover, softcover, and all the ebook editions, that's The Soul Whisperer's Decision by Gwen M. Plano.
All right, and before we get too far, I see Verwayne Greenhow is in the audience, and he says, I also attended, go blue, Michigan.
Ha-ha.
All right, so there you go. Now, also, Gwen M. Plano's The Gift, Harbor Point Series Book 8, or Book 2 out of a series of 8 books, is available now. And keep your eyes peeled on the Fresh Ink Group YouTube channel, because we will be having a book trailer for that up hopefully tonight. Once I get done over here, I'm going to go upload that video and you all can take a look at it. If you want to be part of tonight's episode, if you have a question or a comment for tonight's guest, there are a couple ways you can go about doing that. And here's how you do that.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest. Or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
All right. So,
we've got another book that we just put out a couple of weeks ago. It's called Village Boss by Ronan Duvall. And that's R-O-N-E-N-I-N. D-U-V-A-L, Ronan Duvall's Village Boss, and it's a kind of an international crime thriller about a Colombian who gets caught up in a lot of stuff and has to make a lot of moral decisions and decide what kind of person he really wants to be. And that's Village Boss by Ronan Duvall, out there in hardcover, softcover, and all the ebook editions at all of your favorite retailers.
Yeah, that's a good thriller. If you're into that globe-hopping thriller stuff, espionage and CIA brainwashing, and that's your book. Celebrate 98. This is a celebration of the 1998 Tennessee Volunteers National Championship college football team. And that's out now. That is by Dave Hooker of Off the Hook Sports. Not Off the Hork Sports. As I almost said again, Off the Hook Sports. Now, if you want to know what all we've got coming out book-wise, when it's coming out, you want to know the ins and outs of this indie publishing stuff we call Fresh Ink Group, we've got a newsletter. Here's how you can subscribe to it if you're not already there.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter. New releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
And we've got another novel that we're looking to get out in the next week or so, trying to get these out in time for Christmas presents. And it's Ran, A Hidden Civilization by Robert G. Willis Croft. That's the third Orc Chronicle in the Orc Chronicle science fiction series. It's great interstellar science fiction with alien races and all kinds of interstellar espionage and the Arcans, which look like giant lizard people. That's Ran, A Hidden Civilization by Robert G. Willis Croft. Oh, I see. I just stepped on your line. Let's get to the top 25 print bestsellers from Fresh Ink Group. Let me pop over here and look at the list. All right. We've got in the 25 position, Celebrate 98, The Untold Stories Behind the Tennessee Football Vols 1998 National Championship. Above that at 24, we've got Tales from the Riverside by Larry Landgraf. That's a memoir with lots of short tales. And next above that, The Chair, Volume 3, 7, 8, and 9 by Robert McKenzie. And that's a paperback edition. That's the third edition of his Chair series. We just recently published number 4, so we'll see where that falls on the list. Above that, 8 Hateful Miles, A Sideline Pass to Tennessee's Fiercest Rivalry by Stephen Hargis. That's between two Tennessee high school football teams. We published that book 5 or 6 years ago, and it's still making our bestseller list, especially in the fall when college football and high school football is really heating up. Above that, Najma Thomas's As We Remember, A History of the Woman's Relief Corps in Beaufort, South Carolina, or Beaufort, South Carolina, depending on whether you pronounce it like a northerner or a southerner. And that's a look at the first all-black Woman's Relief Corps in the South. And it's just full of great stories, behind-the-scenes stuff, color pictures. It's just a wonderful piece of history. Now, above that, another Chair book, The Chair, Volume 2, Faith, Hope, and Love by Robert McKenzie. So that's 2 and 3 so far have made our list. And then the hardcover edition of David Carroll's I Won't Be Your Scapegoat, David Carroll's Homemade Social Media Blunders. Above that, The Chair, Volume 1. So that's 1, 2, and 3 all on our bestseller list now. What's going to happen with the newest one, number 4? We'll see in a minute. That's followed by, above that, Volunteer Bama Dog by David Carroll. He's the Chattanooga area NBC evening newscaster, and this is a look at Southernisms, people in the South, and just all kinds of fun stories and tales about things that go on. Now, above that, one we haven't seen on the list in a while, and paperback editions are starting to move. One of the first books we ever published by attorney Robert Scott called Two Friends, Too Old. That's about two old guys.
Wow.
One of them starts getting dementia, and one of them, the other one, accidentally kills somebody, and they get caught up in quite a mess that they have to try to get themselves out of. Above that, Kenneth Lindquist, How to Teach Driving Behind the Wheel, Lesson by Lesson, Instructor's Edition. And that's the hardcover edition. There's also, besides ebooks and paperbacks of that, there's also a parent's edition of How to Teach Driving. Next, another David Carroll, the NBC newscaster. Hello, Chattanooga, famous people who have visited the Tennessee Valley. What do you think of that one, Beam?
That's an excellent book if you're into entertainment, music, boxing, sports, all the indoor stuff. But there's some outdoor stuff, too. But it covers everybody who played in Chattanooga from the turn of the last century up to modern times, and it's a who's who of entertainers and where they played and little interesting tidbits and stories from behind the scenes and what was going on there throughout the decades, and just an interesting read. If you're into entertainment history, this is your book.
Yeah. We've already mentioned Eight Hateful Miles, about the two rival high school football teams. The paperback edition is next up on our list. Now we're moving up into the top ones here. Village Boss, the hardcover edition. People think novels don't sell in hardcover anymore unless your name's Stephen King. Village Boss by Ronan Duvall, the hardcover edition, is now on our list. And above that, there it is, The Chair, Volume 4, Punt, Pass, and Kick. That's the paperback edition. So now we've seen all four of The Chair editions on our bestseller list. Above that, we've got American Agony, The Opioid War Against Patients in Pain by Dr. Helen Burrell. And this is a hard look at the politics behind opioid drug enforcement that's going on in the United States right now. Above that, the paperback edition of retired U.S. Navy Lieutenant Commander Jerry Pate's Submariner, 30 Years of Hijinks and Keeping the Fleet Afloat. That's 60 chapters of memoir about life above and below the seas and all the adventures, and he tells it like it is, which is, it's a great, great book, and it's proving to be very popular. Congratulations, Jerry. Now, above that, we've got The Essence of Spiritual Awakening, Enlightenment, Inspiration, and Insights that Illuminate the Path to Divinely Guided Wisdom by Judy White Arts, and that's the paperback edition. So that is now at our top seven. At the number seven slot, Judy White Arts' The Essence of Spiritual Awakening. Six and five, both of those slots, again back-to-back, is The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip by longtime Alabama drummer, Country Music Hall of Fame drummer Mark Herndon, one of our favorite people. Lives just not far from me down here in Alabama. And that's, 2016, I think, is when we published that. So that's been six, 7 years now, and it's still riding our bestseller lists. Now, those of you who follow college football know it's that time of year, so there's no surprise here that number four is Dave Hooker's Celebrate 98, The Untold Stories Behind the Tennessee Football Vols 1998 National Championship. And it's the hardcover edition. So the more expensive, nicer collector's version is the one that's in our number four slot. That gets us to our top three, our gold, silver, and bronze winners this week. In the bronze slot at number three, the hardcover edition of The Chair, Volume 4, Punt, Pass, and Kick by Robert McKenzie. That's a novel. It's a long novel. It's an expensive novel. That's well over 600 pages. And the hardcover dust jacketed premium edition from Fresh Ink Group is in our number three slot, outselling the soft cover. So take that, wow, you naysayers. That gets us to the top two. Now, the two authors in our top two are the NBC newscaster in Chattanooga and Judy White Arts. Now, I talked to Judy a little bit this afternoon and told her that her book was in the number one slot, and we were all proud of that. Since then, it has slipped to number two, Judy. So The Essence of Spiritual Awakening, Enlightenment, Inspiration, and Insights that Illuminate the Path to Divinely Guided Wisdom is in the number two slot of among our bestsellers, which, hey, number two is really good, really good. And it's the hardcover edition. So again, people are willing to spend some extra money in order to have that nice deluxe edition. And we're proud of that, Judy. Congratulations. And we expect to see you on this list for a while. That gets us to number one. David Carroll, I Won't Be Your Scapegoat. David Carroll's homemade social media blunders. What's that thing about, Beam?
That's about social media blunders. That's misspelled words or the wrong usage of a word, and it's funny. Laugh out loud funny. Stephen and I were going through it before we printed it, published it, and we were laughing out loud. So you will too, I promise.
All right. So.
Okay, so that's that. Listeners, if you've missed an episode, or you just want to go and listen to a favorite episode, here's how you can do that. We've got them all in the archives.
Find your favorite show in the Voice of Indy archives on YouTube at Fresh Ink Group, StephenGees.com, BeamWeeks.com, FreshInkGroup.com, and on Spotify. And now, you can listen on iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and tune in. Just search The Voice of Indy, all one word.
All right.
All right. You want to go ahead and roll the ad for Celebrate 98, and then we'll see
yes,
this week.
We will.
Yes.
Dave Hooker here, longtime Tennessee sports writer, and I know that true Tennessee fans are celebrating the 25th anniversary of the legendary 1998 Tennessee Volunteers Championship season. Tell you what, you celebrate 98, I try to bring the full color photos and detail of the transfer of power from Peyton Manning to Al Wilson, the preparation to win the first BCS National Championship, the locker room dynamics, and the challenges of a team rising above deep tragedy. Key plays include interception, a fumble maybe against Arkansas, and a bit of trickeration. Also, there's that Florida game. I analyze the leadership, the strategies, and the players' commitment to each other and share what we are still learning from this team even today. Discover what happened to those heroes of the gridiron and where they are now. Proudly published by the Fresh Ink Group, Celebrate 98 is available in all the digital forms, but you can also get your own soft cover or jacketed hardcover keepsake edition from booksellers worldwide. Want an autographed edition? Go to offthehooksports.com. That's offthehooksports.com, and I'll personalize it for you. Celebrate 98 is a collector's item and a cherished gift that belongs to all fans of college football and the Tennessee Volunteers.
All right. Before we meet today's guest, I want to remind people that this is Gwen M. Plano, not only one of our favorite authors, but one of our favorite people. And
yes.
You people can call in and talk to her at 516-453-9902. I'm telling you, people, this is your chance. Someday you'll be telling your great-great-grandchildren, I got to talk to Gwen Plano way okay. back in the day.
Now, before you go any further, on Twitter, Jackie Murray says, looking forward to hear Gwen Plano on tonight's podcast. So there
See,
we go.
She knows.
She knows.
She knows what she's talking about. And you can, too.
Thank you, Jackie.
Just remember, 516-453-9902. So, Gwen M. Plano, also known as Gwendolyn M. Plano, spent most of her professional life in higher education. Recently retired, she now lives in the high desert of Arizona, where she writes, gardens, and travels with her husband. As an aside here, she also occasionally shares a gorgeous picture. Man, it's beautiful out there where she lives. Gwen's first book is an acclaimed memoir, Letting Go Into Perfect Love. Her second book, The Contract Between Heaven and Earth, is a thriller, and it was co-authored by John W. Howe. It has received multiple awards and is an Amazon bestseller. The Choice, The Unexpected Heroes, is the sequel to The Contract. The third book in the series, The Culmination, A New Beginning, is an action-packed military thriller that involves the threat of World War III. The series underscores the belief that only love can change the fate of humanity. And that's a deep thought. We're going to talk to Gwen about that in a little bit here. In keeping with that theme, Redemption, A Father's Fatal Decision, focuses on the choice a father makes to protect his family. Gwen's newly released novella, The Gift, is a story of three families who meet unexpectedly and rediscover the importance of love. Now, since then, we have obviously published The Soul Whisperer's Decision this week for release January 15th, so we're eager to talk to Gwen about that. When Gwen is not writing, she's often in the beautiful Red Rocks of Sedona, where she finds inspiration and peace. Welcome to the show, Gwen.
Welcome.
After that introduction, I don't know what to say, so thank you.
Well, how about we know where you're at now, and, you know, we've been on the show before, but for those who aren't familiar, where are you originally from, and where have y'all lived that has brought you to Arizona?
Well, originally, I grew up in Southern California, in the desert, actually. About 15 miles from the nearest town of 12,000. That gives you a sense of just the, you know, the isolation that was part of the life. I'm the eldest of seven living siblings. And why I mention that is that sometimes there are pieces of family that come into my writing. And since I'm the eldest, it's always an interesting experience with mom and dad passed. But any case, with that rich background, and I consider it that, to live on an active farm, you learn not only to give of yourself and work hard, but you learn values. It's a different way of life. These days, we see a lot of children who are homeschooled, and even though I wasn't homeschooled, it was very similar because it was a country school with just a few students in each class. So I identify with all these kids who are at home learning. Where I lived after that, I lived in Northern California for a while. I lived back east in Connecticut and New York area for, 25 years or so. Even lived in Japan for 5 years. Along the way, I got a few degrees. And I know people sometimes wonder about that, all the academic background, but mine was almost accidental. And I want to mention that because I live next to a seminary, and I decided to take classes. I've always had a great love for anything theological or religious in general. And one day after I was taking a class, the teacher, a priest, came up to me and said, well, when you finish this class, you'll have your master's. I hadn't even planned to get a master's, not at all. And then I began, once I got that master's, I began working for the seminary. And that was interesting because they asked me if I'd be interested in getting a counseling degree. And I said, well, sure. And I did. That, again, didn't feel like work. It was something second nature to me. And all the while, I was having children. I have 4 kids, and they're sort of separated by when I was getting these degrees and when I was working. But I wanted to make my point in terms of that because it sounds like when you just say about the degrees that it's a really heady thing, and it is not. It was a matter of pursuing my own personal love. These interests were simply my loves. So that's that background, and that's why I've lived in different places. I was in different universities and colleges. And for most of my career, I was in administration. So I was in top administration, but not the, vice president positions. But it was not in the academic realm. I was vice president of student services. Now, why that is important to mention to you is that in the academic world, it separates out. You have classroom activities, and then you have everything else that includes things like the health center, like residence life, like a career center, and discipline, which is a big one. But anyway, all of the non-classroom activities fell to me. So some of the stories I have actually fall back into that arena. I learned a great deal from these young people, fell in love with them in the sense of feeling very maternal. So I had my own 4 kids, but in reality it was thousands. And they taught me a lot, and hopefully I taught them a few things along the way. But it's a rich background for me in the sense of a wealth of experience, a wealth of experience I never expected. And it just evolved. And as it evolved, I just took the opportunities and discovered an area of working with people, young people, that I really loved. So that's a bit about me, and I don't know if you need to know any more. But my husband and I, yes, live in northern Arizona now, and I usually say it's high desert, and I was corrected on that. So I'm not sure what you call this area. It's north of Prescott, but south of Flagstaff, and an hour from Sedona. It's an absolutely beautiful area.
Gorgeous,
Yes. The pronghorn run free. They are just incredible animals, and they run free in the fields. And otherwise, this is horse territory. It's a bit amazing for me to walk around because many of the people here have horses like in their backyard. It's kind of amazing. But they have great love for animals, and I have as well. So it's home for us now. It's closer to where my husband's children live, and I fly back east to be with mine and my grandkids. We had to make a decision to go one way or the other, and we chose warmth, which is our area. We don't have the harsh winters here, but we do have, you know, chilly weather, but it's not as harsh as Connecticut, for example.
What's the weather like right now, temperature-wise, out there?
Well, I just did a fast check, and it's 52 right now. When I wake up in the morning, it's going to be in the 30s. But right now, it's 52.
Well, we didn't get out of the low 30s here in Michigan today, and it was cold because there was a wind.
Oh, gosh. That's the benefit of living south, Beam.
Yeah. Now, Gwen, you've already mentioned that your husband and your four kids. I want to do a little bit of bragging here. Tell us about your husband. Is he retired too? What did he do? And what's up with your kids and grandkids?
All right. Well, if I were to brag about it, my husband is retired from IBM. He was first in the Navy. And in his role in the Navy, he was a radio person on flights, you know, taking both supplies and, probably Marines and Army young guys over to Vietnam. But because of that background, when he finished his stint with the Navy, he was immediately recruited by IBM, and that's where he spent his career, and he is retired yet. And he has three children, and let's see, he has, I think, six grandkids, and mine are all in the East at this moment, and so I have three sons and a daughter. My sons have actually established several Mexican restaurants in New York City and Brooklyn. They did this because when they were growing up, I fed them a lot of Mexican food, and I have to say they're far better cooks than me. But they had that exposure because that's what I grew up with, and so that's what I cooked. They have their restaurants, and my four grandkids are also busy in school. And my daughter is more involved with alternative health. She not only studies in that area, but she gives presentations and works in that field of alternative medical assistance.
That's definitely a big field. Now, these grandkids, are you smelling any writers in the group, maybe?
Yeah, actually, yes. And two of my sons, actually all three of them, but they are quite the writer, and I've said that to them, but they shy away from it. But I'm telling you, I wouldn't be surprised if someday they started writing. I waited until I retired, so they might do that. We'll see.
Maybe you'll be asked to write a foreword.
That would be interesting.
Yeah. All right, Beam, you want to go ahead and roll another ad here? And then we're coming back and talking to Gwen M. Plano, and people call in 516-453-9902.
Our mistakes do not define us. All of our experiences and challenges, especially the most painful, serve a greater purpose. A lifelong journey of profound experiences and personal sacrifices led Judy White Arts to discover her destiny and connect with her true, authentic self. Judy shares her story and divine pearls of wisdom in this memoir that is equal parts inspiration, insight, and self-help. The essence of spiritual awakening, enlightenment, inspiration, and insights that illuminate the path to divinely guided wisdom is beautifully illustrated with full-color photos and a journal in the back for recording your personal thoughts. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, Judy's book is available in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. Discover your true authentic self through the essence of spiritual awakening as you journey toward your path to self-enlightenment.
All right. So we are talking with Gwen M. Plano. And Gwen, going back to your career, is it you that lived in Japan for a while?
Yes, I did for 5 years. That's correct.
Give us a brush up on that. We got people that probably weren't even listening the last time you were on. So tell us a little bit about that, about living in Japan and how that came about. And what was it like to live in Japan?
We're going back now to the 1970s that I lived. And in fact, my daughter was born there in Kyoto. I lived in Niigata, Kyoto, and Kamakura, those three cities. I taught English as a second language, and all the while was also studying, it sounds a little more than what it was, practicing meditation is what I would say. So although I was teaching in a couple of different, they were university settings, but they were teaching English as a second language. I was also in the temples practicing Zazen. Now, for those who are unaware, Buddhism is not a religion. It is a way of life. So while I was there, I was also in association with many foreigners who were missionaries from various churches, Presbyterian, Evangelicals, Methodist, Catholic missionaries. And many of these individuals would also practice the Zazen. It's a different way of settling in and seeing reality. And I want to share something. It's kind of, it is actually tied to the books that I write. And so I think it's worth to share. One of the teachers, and we always called him Sensei, which means teacher, made this point when he was speaking with those of us who were practicing Zazen, that life is not fair. And at the time, I thought, well, that sounds about right, but it didn't have an impact. It was only as I got much older, and even now, where I realized what it means. Because each of us measures life in our own framework. Well, we expect a good person to have good things, and it's just not right if a good person suffers, that type of thing. And we equate it with some kind of unfairness. But I don't think it's that now. I'm right now involved with my family. We are going to have a reunion, which is a huge one. And at this reunion, because of the reunion, I should say, I'm doing a lot of looking back, gathering photos. I had taped my parents when asking them very specific questions about our lives, and I'm sharing this. Well, what has happened is it's really pulled me deep within my heart, and something soft has emerged because this is what I found, and that brings me back to Japan, but this is what I found. Through the particular mountains that I have climbed, figuratively, I am now more aware, more loving, wiser, kind of person. I think that when we can see this, feel it, we can actually let go of hurts and really, truly forgive. And I'm bringing this up because part of one of my first book, the memoir, actually focuses a great deal on forgiveness. And in each of the books I've written, that is the theme that goes in it. But it was with this realization, I now can totally get what Sensei was saying about life not fair, because life isn't fair by our typical way of seeing. And my books deal with tragedies. They deal with every day kind of experiences of pain or sorrow. But instead, if we look at our lives and how we've grown, we actually could come to a place of gratitude that path we traveled, we would never have chosen, but it was a path that made us who we are now. I mean, how beautiful is that? So I'm mentioning, I'm sort of diverting from things, but it's actually part of the books that I write that I'm trying to address, that all of us are climbing mountains, right? I mean, they look different from one another. But then if we can see the other side, if we can find some, for me, because I'm reviewing all this family stuff, looking at my early lives, looking at photos and everything else, can see ourselves and see ourselves now, then we have a chance of actually letting go, finding a place of true gratitude that all of this, all of what our life has been, has brought us right here. I think that is quite an amazing gift. So,
definitely.
I definitely agree. I'm one who believes firmly, now that didn't always believe this, but in the last 20 years, strength comes from the struggle. If you're not going through struggles, you're not building strength. And strength is what helps you persevere at points in your life that you need strength to persevere. But it also, I think, like you said, it makes us better people, more forgiving and more open to loving people that maybe years ago we weren't wanting to love.
That's right.
You know what I mean? If I'm making that sound, understandable.
I totally agree with you. It has shifted how I see some people. A former self. I'll make it real. But I mean, seriously, you see their behavior in a slightly different way, because I'm not excusing any of this kind of stuff. It's not that, but through that experience, I have emerged a much, just as you said, Beam, stronger person. I have emerged far wiser than I was. So you see, it's an interesting thing. And in that process, then you can say, well, strangely, thank you for all of that stuff that you threw at me. So you can say that towards somebody you don't like, or you can say, well, I mean, obviously to yourself, you don't have to go up and say it. But you say, all right, and then you let it go. Then you can truly let it go. It's because they have fulfilled their role, and it's done. So it's kind of, it's a beautiful realization, I have to say.
All right. We have a question over on Twitter from Dr. Helen Burrell that fits right in with what you were just talking about. She says, Ms. Plano, can you describe the process of letting go as it relates to writing? I suspect your perspective from a theological mind will be instructive to us other writers.
Well, what I'm going to say is probably different from most writers, and by the way, I have a deep admiration for writers who can actually outline their book, and this is why. When you say about letting go, I put it into God's hand, and it's just something I do. But this is what happens to me, and every single book I've written has come this way. I start waking up at 2:30, sometimes earlier, and I will have a whole scene in front of me, and I will hear the conversation. I'm not talking about something weird like coming out of the clouds, voices and stuff. It's not that. It's more imaginative. It's just that it's there. And I was explaining to Beam and Stephen that I know my last book, which will come out in January, is going to be a series. And I know this because in the early morning, I see the scenes. I know what's going to happen, and I know what is next. So in a sense, letting go for me when it comes to writing is kind of trusting that what needs to be written, either for me or others, what needs to be written will be shown. I will know what I need to write. And as I said, while I admit this about my writing style, I look upon others who actually can outline their story and write from that, because that is not how I write. I write purely from inspiration in the sense of how it arises and what stimulates me. So I don't know that I've answered this question of yours. Please forgive me if I haven't, because my writing approach is a different one. It's just a different one.
Yeah, you answered perfectly, because Dr. Helen's always interested in what people's process is. So you related the letting go and explained your process too. So, and that's very interesting. Is, you know, Beam and I are outliners, and we're the type that like to think through everything, work out all the details, rearrange stuff, add stuff, take things out, and have a pretty good roadmap before we actually get too far into writing it. And you're just riding that wave of inspiration, and it's working very well for you. Your books are excellent, and keep it up. Hang on to that wave. Keep riding, and see where it takes you. Isn't it exciting to see, just look ahead and see that more's coming?
Yeah.
So thank you.
So this is a perfect time, since you kind of touched on it, your latest book, the one that's coming out in January, The Soul Whisperer's Decision.
For sale now.
For sale now. You can go and pre-order it. What's this about?
The Soul Whisperer's Decision is a love story, but not in a traditional sense. It's not a romance in the sense of a romance. But it begins with a tragic situation. The protagonist, a nurse, is walking home from a full day of working, and her shift is completed. She's walking home feeling quite lighthearted and happy. And her home is only a mile or something from the hospital. And then she arrives and hears her little 2 or 3-year-old boy running out, so happy to see her. And then she sees her little, she's 4 or 5 months old. And so she's got these two little kids and her husband who loves her dearly, and she him. So you have a scene of just a beautiful family. And she decides to go to the grocery store because they're out of all the basic things that they need. And the two little kids want to come. And so she takes them so her husband can have a break. Because this was a Saturday. It wasn't her usual work day. But she volunteered when this other nurse needed help. And her husband is home, so he's taking care of the kids. So she takes the kids, and they head out in the car. And it's about a block away when she's at an intersection. The light is red, and she waits, but then the light turns green. So she eases across the intersection, and unfortunately, there's a large truck that barrels down the road and hits her broadside. So this is how the story begins. It begins with a tragedy, but that tragedy ends up providing a lot of gifts. But I will say with this tragedy, the two little kids die. And the nurse, the protagonist, is in a coma for several weeks. She technically dies when she's on the surgery table. And in that state, she has a near-death experience. This near-death experience is she's taken it through the traditional kind of lines of near-death experience, and she is in the heavenly realm, and she sees her children. Her two little ones, are ecstatic. They are absolutely in a pure place of joy. And in this place of bliss comes aware of her husband, because an angelic figure says to her that she can remain with her children, or she can return to life. She makes a choice. She wanted to stay with her children because it was so blissful to be there. She decides instead that she had to return to her husband because she saw just how tortured he was, how serious his pain was for the loss of her kids, and very likely, he thinks, the loss of his wife. So it begins like that. And as a footnote, I began reading research and books on near-death experiences in the 1980s. I've done that for years, and it's part of my interest in the supernatural, in the heavenly realms, in understanding spirituality. All of that is wrapped up into what my interest is. So I brought it into this story, or I should say it was brought into my story in the early morning, how it evolved. But here you have then this nurse who is bedridden and comatose, the husband coming home to a house that is no longer a home. He reaches a point where he decides that he is going to end his life. And it's a serious exchange that occurs. And just as he's ready to pull the trigger on his gun, he hears his captain from when he was in the Marines in Afghanistan. He hears his captain yell at him to get his life together. So there's a turning point right there with him, because he puts away his gun. As desperate as he is, he also decides he's going to find out about life and why he should even live. So you have her in the hospital, him in this struggle, and then she regains consciousness. He has gone on a journey, which I'll leave for the readers to discover what this journey is. But nevertheless, she awakens, and he is gone. And you have a whole exchange that happens with her in the hospital and everything. But the doctor, her surgeon, is the one that she speaks to and shares her experience. And she tells him, and she was very reticent, but she finally tells her surgeon that while she was on the surgery table, she saw him pronounce her dead. And she recounts, because she's a nurse and she knows all this stuff, she recounts all the details that took place in the surgical setting. And then she tells him about her near-death experience with her children. And he acknowledges, over the years as a neurosurgeon, he's had several people say similar things. Well, out of this whole encounter then, and through the book, you see the evidence of it. She is asked by this surgeon if she would take a different role for now, because when she's finally up, she's in a wheelchair. She has a lot of rehab that she has to go through. But in the wheelchair, she can meet with the comatose patients, and she does. She meets with them. And talks with them very carefully about the choices, about life, about what lies ahead for them in this journey to the heavenly realm. And some of these people choose to come back to life, and then later on in the book, they actually meet with her and thank her for the guidance that she gave. And there's different ones. At times it's little children. At times it's a victim of violence. At times it's people who are on the table who have died because of drugs. So she's given this gift from the decision she made to come back. She was given this gift to speak to those who are transitioning. And that is where you see her working very beautifully and powerfully with end-of-life people. So that's pretty much the story, although I didn't go into the husband's journey and how the two of them get back together. But as I said, it is a love story. It's just a different kind of love story. And it isn't simply a romance, not at all. Love actually involves patients in a hospital.
Well, people have to order the book to learn more, won't they?
Yes, they will. And I want to acknowledge that I am not a medical professional. However, my sister is a retired nurse and also was an academic dean overseeing nursing, and I had her go through, and she made some corrections. Anyway, I'm terribly indebted to her for her brilliance and her gentleness in showing me different things, because it's one thing to be a patient in the hospital. I'm familiar with that scene, but it's quite another to be the surgeon, to be the nurses, and to actually see the whole surgical ward or the ER as it is set up and used. But that's what my sister provided. So I just want you to know it's legitimate. My sister was there.
Yeah. Now, it's too soon to have feedback from readers because it's still in pre-sale until January 15th. But I hear there's been a little bit of buzz about people liking the cover. What can we see on the cover?
Oh, my. The cover is beautiful because it was designed and created by Fresh Ink Group. It is really beautiful. What you have is a scene of like a forested area and a path going forward with two people, a young woman and a young man, walking hand in hand into light. So it's a beautiful capture of this in between, the journey into light. That's how I see it. And it's I have to congratulate your artist, Stephen and Beam, and your contributions on it, because it's a stellar cover. Thank you.
We appreciate that. We're proud of it too. And we think it really communicates the feeling of the story. And that's what's important. Now, Gwen, you've got another book that's just recently come out in the last couple of weeks, The Gift. And we've got a trailer for that. So let's hear that, Bean.
In an innocent 1958 American suburb, Shelley doesn't know the power of a kiss or how it will change her entire life. At 16 years old, she falls in love with a young man. One night, just one night, they go too far. Months later, pregnant and shamed, Shelly's parents banish her. Alone and heavily pregnant, circumstances force Shelly to cross the country in an old pickup. A mistaken turn leaves her lost in a forest amidst a severe snowstorm and in labor. In the dark of night, Shelly must get help for her newborn baby before they both perish. A light in the distance gives her the slimmest glimmer of hope. After Shelly wraps the infant in her father's old jacket, she trudges through the snow to a lighthouse keeper's cottage. Snowhouse buries the squat stone building. Will Shelly find shelter, or is it the beginning of the end? Read The Gift by Gwen M. Plano, published by Fresh Ink Group, exclusively on Amazon Kindle.
All right. So, Gwen, tell us some of the details behind this, the fact that it's a series, and how that all came about.
With more than one writer.
Yeah.
Yes, the series involves eight women members from Story Empire, and it was just fortuitous on my side that I was able to be one of the writers for it. And we wrote with three points in mind, that there would be this lighthouse in the area of a town called Harbor Point, and that there would be the Hawthorne family. So over a period of, I don't know, it's about 100 years or so, each of us had the story. Mine took place in the late 50s, and others are scattered throughout the times. And each of ours are standalone stories, but they are connected through those three points. It's this locale and the Hawthorne family. I would like to say with this story that we're dealing with a young woman who gets a young teenager who gets pregnant and, of course, is shamed by it, and her family reject her. But it is a love story, truly a love story. It's a Christmas novella. But I want to tell you the rest of the inspiration. When I was working, and I mentioned to you that I had everything outside of the classroom, there was a young woman who got pregnant. Nobody knew about it. In the job I had, I never knew about anything until it was a problem, and I had it. So in this case, this young woman carried a baby to term, young student. She was a freshman, so we're talking 18, 19 years old. Carried the baby to term, and nobody seemingly knew about it until she was discovered unconscious in the dormitory, and the baby did not survive. So the tragedy of this scene was overwhelming. I worked a lot with this young woman, and she had a happy ending at the school because she graduated with honors. But the following year, and I had then, after this situation happened, I spoke to students, I had workshops, I did a lot of things. And basically what I said to people, if you see someone needing help or someone's pregnant, then you please get hold of me. Well, I got an anonymous phone call the following year. And it was a young man. He said, I believe this girl is pregnant. And he told me her name. I looked her up and met her at her classroom. So here, and I knew immediately, as soon as I saw her, and she hung her head low as soon as she saw me because she knew who I was. I knew she was full term, and I took her to the doctor immediately. And the doctor told her and me that she was due any day. So here was a second girl who carried a baby full term, and thank God in this case, a young male student called me. So what happened, though, and this is what I want to share, because it happens in this story, The Gift. When the mother, you know, it took a lot for me to get this young woman to call her parents. She did not want to call. She begged me. It was It was a heartache for me. Finally, she conceded and called her mother. And the mother came in about an hour later. She also lived in Connecticut and drove there. She came in yelling. She yelled and then wouldn't even look at her daughter, who was beautiful, but she wouldn't look at her. She yelled and said that she was going to take her home. She was going to have the baby induced. They were going to give it away. And then they were never to discuss it again. Well, I can tell you, it still brings me to tears. It's so upsetting for me what occurred. That was in the late 1990s, 50 years.
Wow.
You know, this is, you don't expect this kind of stuff. What I was going to say is for me, for example, I was the product of, my mother was an unwed mother, and my dad, and she married. But there was also, in my family, there was an extra sensitivity to any young woman who got pregnant. In fact, my mother established a home for unwed mothers.
Wow.
And so, yes. And so, you see, I had this kind of sensitivity anyway. And then these students, these two young girls, 1 year apart, both were freshmen. The thing that made this one, the second one, particularly sad was that she didn't know who the father was. She had passed out at a party and was raped. And there was no, because she never went to a doctor, there was nothing we could do to even find out who the father was. But it was just a tragedy all the way around. So the inspiration for writing The Gift, it wasn't that I had all of this in my mind. Keep in mind, I've already shared with you how I'm inspired. It was in the middle of the night again, and then I saw a young girl who got pregnant, and the story just evolved. So that is what happened, and that is why I joined this group of eight women and offered my novella as part of this series.
Okay. So now the series, as you mentioned, it's written through Story Empire. Tell the listeners what Story Empire is, and we'll go from there.
All right. Well, Story Empire is a group of 12 writers initially formed. I'm going to mention her name, Mae Claire, who came together, I think, with Craig Boyack. The two of them who wanted to create something supportive of writers. Well, it grew to 12 writers, and they're all specialists in different genres. And this group is meant to be and is a supportive, encouraging kind of group, and as well as a community of writers who share information, especially technical information, of which I know nothing. Thank God you guys are around. But anyway, they share about things like technology, or if there is a marketing development that they feel everybody should know, then it's shared. So it's an inspirational group because it is such a positive group, and I'm very fortunate to be a member.
So how do people find Story Empire? Can they subscribe?
They can subscribe to get the information. As far as being a member, that's a different matter. But subscribe to their blog and the kind of materials they might put out, absolutely.
How do they find it? Storyempire.com?
Yes, absolutely. That's perfect. Yes.
Great. Now, before The Gift, the previous book that we published was Redemption, A Father's Fatal Decision. And we've got a trailer for that.
Family secrets can be deadly. When Lisa visits her parents one fateful Saturday morning, she hugs her father and takes her suitcase to her childhood bedroom. The doorbell rings, and 1 minute later, her father lies dead on the floor, 3 bullets to the chest. The death of Eric Holmes sends shockwaves throughout the quiet neighborhood. But for the Holmes family, it's devastating. In this fast-paced psychological thriller, Lisa and her brother embark on a quest to solve the mystery of their father's murder. The journey takes them into a secret world where nothing is as it seems. Once the puzzle pieces begin to coalesce, they realize that their father had multiple lives. As the facts unravel, the siblings discover the true meaning of redemption. Gwen M. Plano's Redemption is available worldwide in softcover, jacketed hardcover, and all ebook formats, published proudly by Fresh Ink Group. Redemption by Gwen M. Plano.
All right. Gwen, Redemption. How did this come about? Where did you find this story in the ether?
It was definitely in the ether, but this was shit.
What was the inspiration?
The inspiration, well, I went from writing thrillers, military thrillers. So in a sense, this was to say goodbye to the global craziness of which I can't impact, but to say goodbye to that and move to the personal. So I knew I wanted to move to personal, and this really is a story of forgiveness, and it just emerged with an idea to write a story about forgiveness, and unfolded pretty easily, actually, as I started with a father who had a hidden life, and you follow the children as the adult children as they try to unravel that life and figure out, my gosh, who is this man that we called father or dad? And then they find out what it means just to forgive, to let it be, because of his final choice, which was a choice for them. So his final actions were selfless and loving, and that shaped their ability to forgive and accept and move on with life.
Wow, very, very succinct. Now, so, before that, you also had a trilogy. The first book was written with John W. Howell, and the second and third book you wrote by yourself. Tell us about the trilogy.
Well, I didn't expect it to be a trilogy, but it came that way. It was like it was needed to be more. I can tell you a little bit about John, which was funny, because when I first realized I was going to write a thriller, it was because, as I said, early morning images, and I had never written a thriller, and I wasn't confident I could. But I decided to talk to John about it because he did write thrillers, and he does write thrillers, so I knew he knew what he was doing, and it took all my strength to make that call. It took it all, because I thought, he's going to think I'm insane. But anyway, I talked to John, and he said, well, and he, this is truly what he said, well, you've been living a thriller, and because he had read my memoir. And I said, well, yeah. And I realized, okay. And then I asked him if he would co-author, and he thought about it for a second and just said, okay, let's do it. And it was that simple. And so what I want to speak to John about, I speak to you about John, because he added the backbone to the story. I had the story pretty mapped out by then, but he's the one who gave it a different kind of strength, because he understands how to write thrillers. And when the book was finished, that first one, The Contract, there was more that I wanted to write because of the same things of early morning images and all of that. And but partly I'm going to tell you that this deep dive, which I did into all things international and military, changed my life, absolutely changed my life. I was one of those kids who could memorize facts when I was in high school and college. So any history or political science course I took, the only reason I passed, the absolutely only reason, is because I could memorize. I never bothered to pay attention to any of that. So this was a deep dive for me, and I researched immensely. It was horrifying. But anyway, it ended up being three thrillers.
Yeah. Well, we're going to go ahead and play the trailer, let everybody know what the three books are about. And
thank you.
Best-selling author Gwen M. Plano presents The Culmination, A New Beginning, the final book in the Contract thriller series. In the first book, co-penned by best-selling author John W. Howell, the Earth is threatened with a catastrophic event, and Heaven's leadership intervenes with extraordinary measures to ensure the survival of the planet. In Book 2, The Choice, a confidential team uncovers a traitorous conspiracy that has as its goal world domination. The pressing question is, who can be trusted and who cannot? The Culmination, A New Beginning brings the Contract thriller trilogy to a close. After an assassination attempt on an Air Force base in Northern California, tensions mount. Heads of state meet to craft a denuclearization agreement. The meetings between these nuclear powers take a murderous turn. A nefarious conspiracy reemerges and leads the characters into the heart of the Middle East, where they encounter the unexpected and find a reason for hope. Grab your copy now of The Culmination, A New Beginning by Gwen M. Plano. Available worldwide in hardcover, paperback, and all major ebook formats. The Culmination is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
All right. So, Gwen, we have a few minutes left here. Let's move on to your memoir, Letting Go Into Perfect Love. Tell us a little bit about this. This is your first published book, I believe.
That's correct. It was. All right. Well, the way I got through life with my early 20s, 30s, was keeping a journal. And the journal was a way, it wasn't necessarily a way to chronicle my experiences, but more it was a way for me to touch, to talk to the divine. But nevertheless, some of it is chronicled. And when I decided to write my memoir, which was after I retired, I laid out all these journals, and I had, oh my gosh, dozens of them. And so the writing of the actual book was not that difficult because of having all the material already written. But the book itself dives into, you know, physical abuse, emotional abuse in a very unhealthy marriage situation. And it addresses how to find love. And I'm not speaking simply in terms of relational love, but a deeper love that has to do with self and also with the divine. It's very personal. I have given the book to different shelters. It is because I want it to show that there is a way, there's a way. People wonder why I remained in a marriage 25 years, and other people say they make that same critique of anyone who remains in a setting. I can tell you that
if a person is in an abusive marriage, it only takes a while before you're not even there. Mentally not present, you have lost a sense of self, and when that occurs, you are simply a robot. And big part of my life, I thought a lot about suicide, and it was like a detached kind of experience of thinking about in those terms. It wasn't emotional because the emotion was gone. So people are unaware of that. It took a recovery of self to get to the point of actually filing for divorce and getting out of that situation. The story, even though it addresses some heavy things, not just me, but you know, other family members, heavy things, still, it does bring you to a place of what it means to let it go.
Wow. Well, we have a trailer. Let's go ahead and play that.
Inspiring and unforgettable, Letting Go into Perfect Love is a riveting account of a journey through the terror of domestic violence to a faith that transforms all. As a college administrator, Gwendolyn M. Plano lived her professional life in a highly visible and accountable space. But as a wife and mother behind closed doors, she and her family experienced unpredictable threat. Every 9 seconds in the United States, a woman is assaulted or beaten. But to Gwen, this was her secret. It was her shame. Alternately, heart-wrenching and joyful, this is a story of triumph over adversity. One woman's uplifting account of learning how to forgive the unforgivable, recover her sense of self, bring healing into her family, and honor the journey home. Accompanied by glimpses of celestial beings, Gwen charts a path through sorrow to joy, and ultimately writes of the one perfect love we all seek. Gwen's story is heartbreakingly familiar. It provides insight into the phenomenon of domestic violence. Understanding that murky world may provide the reader with the skills to help his or her sister or friend or neighbor. Whether victim or friend, readers will be inspired by the author's courage. Letting Go into Perfect Love by Gwendolyn M. Plano is available now as a Fresh Ink Group edition in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook editions. The Audible audiobook edition is also available at Amazon. Order your copy now, and you may see your own challenges a little differently.
All right. We've been talking to Gwen M. Plano. We've learned about all of her novels and her novella, and that one was her very deeply personal memoir. We recommend all of these books. They're wonderful books, and Gwen's a great writer. What's that, Beam?
I said I didn't say anything, but I'll second that. She's a wonderful writer and a wonderful human being.
Yes, yes. Like I said before, one of our favorite people. So, Gwen, how do people find you, follow you, contact you, send you a note, throw a bag of flaming dog poop on your porch, whatever?
Well, my blog is on gwenplano.com. So that's an easy one, gwenplano.com. And otherwise, if they wanted to reach me through email, it would be gwenplano@gmail.com.
Social media handles?
Well, it would be, yes, for Twitter, it's at GM Plano. And even though I'm on a few others, that's about it that I actually keep active on.
Okay.
So we have been talking with Gwen M. Plano. We thank you very much, Gwen, for taking time out of your evening to come and talk with us.
Yes, it's always a treat.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, now next week we have Carlisle Toms making a return visit. He's got a new book coming out, and you're going to want to know about it, so tune in.
Yeah, that's going to be The Edge of Smoke. And then after that, Robert G. Willis Croft's The Third Orc Chronicle, Ran, A Civilization in Hiding. He's going to be our guest, and he's going to talk about that and all of his series and his other books as well. And what's happening at the end of the year?
at the end of the year, it's going to be the G's and Weeks December 27th special, where we might even have a couple of cold beers sitting in the studio here and just talking about the year in rewind. So tune in for that. It's going to be some fun. We're going to talk about different stuff, a little different from what you're used to hearing from this show, but we're going to have fun with it. So tune in on December 27th.
All right.
And then after that, going into January.
Who have you got lined up?
Going into January, we don't have anybody lined up just yet. We have two guys that we are negotiating with. So keep your eyes and ears on the newsletter. Get subscribed and you'll know.
All right. Thanks again, Gwen. We've had a blast talking to you. Everybody get out there and check out her books. And, thanks for stopping by, Gwen.
Thank you, Gwen.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. We'll see everybody next week with Carlisle Toms.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Our mistakes do not define us. All of our experiences and challenges, especially the most painful, serve a greater purpose. A lifelong journey of profound experiences and personal sacrifices led Judy White Arts to discover her destiny and connect with her true, authentic self. Judy shares her story and divine pearls of wisdom in this memoir that is equal parts inspiration, insight, and self-help. The essence of spiritual awakening, enlightenment, inspiration, and insights that illuminate the path to divinely guided wisdom is beautifully illustrated with full-color photos and a journal in the back for recording your personal thoughts. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, Judy's book is available in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. Discover your true authentic self through the essence of spiritual awakening as you journey toward your path to self-enlightenment.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.